I think it's interesting how coaches can kind of lose sight of the workloads that they're putting on their student athletes. And it may be driven, you know, very naturally on, you know, coming off a loss. We might be this, we might be that. They throw that one practice in there that's just huge, huge trim because they're grumpy and everybody's grumpy and they want to, you know, fix everything and all that. And if you do that long enough, you know, and you end up with these large 7-day acute workloads and they're substantially higher than your chronic workload, then, you know, are we setting them up for injury? Are we doing the best thing for our teams and that sort of thing?
Welcome to the First Beat Sports Podcast, where we talk with coaches and sports scientists to explore the latest in how performance monitoring is making a difference in the NCAA and pro sports alike. We're going to connect you with practical advice from the best in the business to help you take your athletes to the next level.
Steve Chouinard first joined Colgate Athletics more than 20 years ago. He has an extensive career with the department and is currently the Senior Associate Athletics Director for Health and Performance. Steve has previously worked with nearly every sport within Colgate Athletics, and in July 2019, he also received a Maroon Citation for his significant and invaluable personal contributions to Colgate University. Steve joined Colgate from Lehigh, where he served as an assistant athletic trainer. Prior to Lehigh, he spent 1 year as the graduate assistant athletic trainer at the University of Massachusetts and 1 year as an assistant in the Boston College Sports Medicine Department. He has been a certified member of the National Athletic Trainers Association since 1993.
Now let's turn it over to the head of First Beat Sports USA, Benjamin Jensen.
Hello and welcome to the First Beat Sports Podcast. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Steve Chouinard, who is currently the Associate Athletic Director for Health and Performance for Colgate Athletics. Steve, appreciate you being here today. Can you just give us kind of a little intro of your career up to date at Colgate University?
Sure. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. I went to undergrad at University of New Hampshire, 1992 graduate, grad school at the University of Massachusetts, and a little internship in the middle at Boston College, and then got my first job at Lehigh University. And I worked there only for a year. I really, really, really wanted to work hockey. And Colgate University had their hockey position open after a year while I was at Lehigh. And I jumped ship from there. They probably weren't too pleased. But I went to Colgate at that point and been here ever since. So it's been this is my 27th year at Colgate.
Okay, so you've actually been fairly fortunate. You've been able to stay up in the Northeast there your entire career.
Yeah, it's just kind of the way that it's gone. Where me and my wife are somewhat homebodies. We're not necessarily going to leave and go to other parts of the country. And family life for her is super important. So it's really been quite a blessing.
I was going to say, yeah, that's nice. I've worked with some coaches where I've, you know, their resume has 10 or 12 different stops across the country. So.
Right. And everything kind of timed up well. And we had kids at the right time. And I feel blessed.
Excellent. So now your newest role, you are the Associate AD for Health and Performance. And before this, you were the head athletic trainer for many years. What's the difference now between your day-to-day work?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's the life of an athletic trainer is rather difficult. It's very rewarding. It's I would trade none of it. I did 23 seasons with Colgate men's hockey, including the other years that I already mentioned at previous institutions. It's a profession that's extremely rewarding. You have lifelong relationships. I've been to 10 to 15 of my former players' weddings. It's a really, really fantastic thing, but it's a very fatiguing profession. You're with the teams for, you know, pretty much any time they're doing something, you're there. It's a challenge. So as you know, as you age, you get older, the 4 a.m. arrivals back from road trips can get a little fatiguing and that sort of thing. So I was blessed to have an opportunity to move into administration, which is where I am now. So a little bit more of a normal day, if you will, whatever normal means these days, but more of a 9-to-5 kind of day, but built primarily on planning and organizing, troubleshooting, certainly the problems that come up on a daily basis with the areas that are underneath me.
Okay, so you kind of gave up that hectic schedule of, you know, you might only work an 8-hour day, but you're working some 2 hours here, 2 hours here, and then you've got a trip here.
That's right. Or you might, you know, work until 11 at night, you know, that kind of thing. So it's just a little bit more normalcy, a little bit better for my children and my life. And you know, to be honest, after 23 seasons, it was good to try something new.
Good to hear. Okay, so something I always have to ask the AT community, you know, there's a lot of people on both sides. To ice or not to use ice? Where are you on the ice debate here?
Yeah, I think, you got me caught a little bit because I'm a bit of an old school guy. So probably I would favor more of the ice issue, but I certainly understand the change in the way people are talking about it. To be honest, I think it's the injury that dictates it, and it's the inflammatory process that dictates it. So most of your acute stuff, almost anything that's acute, I still prefer to use ice immediately. But the thing that we used to do is we used to, you know, once that injury was sort of even settled down, they were back to play at the end of every practice, say, hey, did you ice it? And I think we can get away from that certainly, because the inflammatory process has certainly been reduced quite a bit because they're back to play. And they may still be bothered by that, whatever that injury might be, but keeping it moving after their activity and not just chilling the area just to chill the area may be more beneficial, because proper movement will probably keep them in a better state of health than, you know, getting the thing all solidified up with ice and stiffening and whatnot. And then they walk out of the training room and they're limping because they got an ice bag attached to them and all that sort of thing. So I think it depends on the state of the injury. The early acute stuff, certainly, yes, I think we still need to have some sort of a cold therapy there, but later on, certainly you can avoid it.
Yeah, I've seen there's kind of really that trend moving away from the daily ice baths and get ice, that if it's needed, let's ice it. But if it's not, you know, let's go through the other procedures there.
That's right. Lots of evidence now too, Ben, if I may, that to the effect on strength and conditioning itself, on strength gains, that jumping into an ice bath right after you do a good hard strength workout actually may minimize the gains from that workout. So, you know, you got to keep an eye on some of the latest information and research and learn a lot to stay up with the trends.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's nothing wrong with being old school, but at the same time, you know, you got to stay on PubMed and make sure you're staying up to date on what's going on.
Amen.
So some exciting things happening at Colgate. So new upgrades to the athletic center. So it looks like Colgate's launched a $1 billion campaign. They've already pulled in $400 million. Well done. With $25 million going towards the athletic facilities. So now, I was on campus in August. I didn't see a whole lot going on. When is this kind of going to happen, or when's the start date for this?
Yeah. So we're super early in the process. Pretty much you get to a point in an institution where they decide that this is something they want to go for. And we've crossed that bridge and decided to, you know, fundraise for it. The planning is in the very, very early stages with architects and whatnot. And so we're still really just in the planning phases, but it's super exciting.
Cool. And so, I mean, they mentioned a new arena, a competition court, update the team locker rooms. Mm-hmm. Kind of one I wanted to touch on was this new health and performance center.
Yeah.
So with your job title, I was kind of wondering, kind of what opportunities will this bring the athletes when it comes to their training?
Yeah, so something we've been really focused on here is trying to change the story between strength and conditioning and sports medicine, if you will. And we combine them into one department, and we call it sports performance. We really need those two groups to work hand in hand. And I think a lot of places they do, but historically, it actually can be two professions that somewhat butt heads when it comes to the care of the student athlete, where traditionally, if you will, and perhaps stereotypically, the strength coach just wants to take that kid and let's go. And the trainer saying, no, slow down. So it can be two very opposing forces. So what we want to do is we want to try to work together. Mm-hmm. So in that spirit, and this is not uncommon, a lot of places have done this, but we want to take those two facilities and physically put them side by side. And currently right now, you may have, I don't know if I showed you the weight room when you were here, but we're separated by a street and we're in separate buildings. And communication is hampered certainly by that. Moving around and getting from place to place doesn't sound that hard, but you know, in the middle of February when there's 2 feet of snow on the ground, it's a little daunting. So having those two things physically sit side by side, offices side by side, we feel like that'll enhance the communication. And ultimately, that's really a lot better for the student athlete. Mm-hmm. There's lots of opportunities for student athletes to do rehabilitation in the weight room, just as much as there is to do rehabilitation in the athletic training room. So I think you can also see, we can probably make their days a little bit more efficient. It's a very busy school. It's a very academically driven school, Colgate, and it's minimizing any duplication of effort, I think, for the student athlete is super important for their efficiency on their day. And frankly, if we are not communicating and you have a kid you're working with an injury and you do a certain set of rehab and then send them to the weight room and they do the same thing because you guys haven't talked, that's not really helping the person. And it might be a situation where you're actually overworking the tissues and creating more problems than it's worth. So we really need to be talking. So in that spirit, we want to put these two facilities side by side and keep these groups as together as possible.
No, I think that's huge. And I love the point you brought up that, you know, when I was there, I think it's less than a 5 minute walk away from, you know, from there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, you don't have time with every athlete or every group of athlete to run over there and say, okay, here's what these guys need to do. Or
that's right.
If you send that text message, he's in a loud gym and he sees the text after he's just done the exact same workout you did.
That's right. So, that's right.
You know, face to face is just priceless, I think.
Yeah, you know, we're hoping to involve a lot of glass between the two facilities. It literally could be a wave and, hey, I got a question, that kind of thing. We just think during a student athlete and staff's busy day that it'll enhance things quite a bit.
Excellent. I'm excited to see what comes with that. I'll have to drop by campus again and see how it is.
Absolutely.
All this new stuff on campus when it comes, do you think this is going to have an impact on recruiting?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. I think facilities are, I'd be just totally guessing, but a major portion of how student athletes make their decisions. If we look at the Patriot League, which is our primary conference outside of hockey, the schools, except for maybe where they're located, are extremely similar. So you need to find something that's going to, you know, break the tie, you know, from us, Bucknell, Lehigh, Lafayette, Boston University, and all the others. You know, if you want to go to school in a city, then you're probably going to pick Boston over Hamilton, because we're certainly not a city, as you noticed.
I did learn that.
Yeah, but it's certainly a case that the academic reputation and the experience they're going to have academically is probably fairly similar. But I think that you need something to kind of break the tie. So facilities are absolutely huge.
Yeah, one thing I did notice, obviously it is a small town in Hamilton, but you know, being to almost 80 different campuses now, it was so easy to get around your campus. Both the academic part, everything was right there. Then athletics, you know, you could, if things were going on, you could go to the baseball game, walk 2 minutes and see softball, soccer, football. Everything was right there.
Absolutely.
I hate using the pandemic word, but I'm going to use it. We're all exhausted by it, but let's just touch one point I wanted to go over. Have you implemented any permanent changes to the way athletes train, or simply gone back to, you know, business as usual?
No, we're pretty much back to where we were. You know, it's I'd like to think that we, you know, we have all the same spray bottles and things in the weight room and the training room and whatnot. I'd like to think that we're already keeping those facilities pretty clean, even pre-pandemic. You know, Colgate is an institution that required vaccination of its employees and its student athletes, or students in general, I should say. So no, we've pretty much moved back to business as usual.
Okay, that's good to hear. And I think it's kind of ironic that a lot of the recommendations that we got from the pandemic, it's like, you know what, we should always have been doing this in the weight room anyways, you know?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of us were, you know, maybe some of the products changed and some of the procedures changed, but I think we were keeping our spaces pretty good.
Yep. With ice hockey already in swing and the basketball season coming up, can you give us kind of a breakdown of how you feel about the basketball and hockey seasons?
You know, we're feeling quite good. I think all four programs in that realm are doing quite well and on the upswing, or playing at a very high level. I think our women's hockey team is number 4 in the country right now. And I guess, like I said, men's hockey hopes to be there as well. Preseason polls are excellent for, you know, sort of a guess of how things are. I think our past performance in men's basketball, you know, 3 tournaments in the past 4 years has been something that we're eager to continue to do well in. And our women's basketball team is certainly well on the upswing. I think they're picked 7th out of 10, which may not sound good, but I think in the past we've been more like 9 or 10. So expectations are high, and I think optimism is high.
Okay, that's good to hear. Name, image, and likeness, also known as NIL. Since June 30th, all of our lives changed when the NCAA has allowed the student athletes to make money from endorsements. What are your thoughts on the NIL?
It's a daunting thing. It's very tricky to control. It's very tricky to define. And I think it's really, really hard to come up with a one-size-fits-all policy. There's a lot of smart people at the NCAA and in different institutions and conferences trying to work on this. You know, it's something that had to be done, and that's okay. But trying to find a way to control it, do it right, and keep with the spirit of amateurism is going to be very interesting to watch over the next couple of years for sure.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's tough because I don't know how else they could have started it without just opening it up and kind of seeing what happens and dealing with the floodgates. But some of the situations where you see some you know, booster saying, okay, I'm going to pay for all the walk-on scholarships and this and that, you know, those are some of the situations. Well, okay, technically that means you can have 125 scholarships where the normal teams are still at 85. And
that's right. You know, do you just let the whole thing go and just let it be what it is and the rich get richer and that sort of thing? Or do you have to control it? And I think you have to control it to some extent, but how you do that is, it's a daunting task for sure.
Yeah. I think I'm going to stick with my job at First Beat. I don't want to deal with that.
There you go.
Yeah. So still on the NIL. So has there been much activity like with the Colgate student athletes?
Small, nothing like you might read about at some of the SEC institutions or Big Ten institutions, things like that. Some small things here or there, mostly social media driven. But, you know, I think we're fairly well prepared. Tony Rogers is our compliance officer, and she's done a great job coming up with NIL policies that the institution has approved and of course, the league. And it's something that I'm sure will grow. I'm not sure at an institution like Colgate will ever see some of the dollars or the deals that we're seeing at some other places, because we just don't have, you know, the money driving college athletic program that you might see in other places. But something we certainly have to be prepared for.
Yeah, I kind of guess you probably won't have the local dealership giving brand new trucks to your starting offensive line anytime soon. But
That's right.
You kind of touched on what I was going to bring up too. So social media. So I was just, you know, I guess my concern, and this is from the outside looking in, I'm not on campus, but are they going to spend more time focusing on social media posts, marketing themselves and the products instead of, because, you know, already between sports in school, you've got a full week. And to put this on top of it, you know, that was kind of the concern I have and see.
Yeah, absolutely. If anything, social media might allow them to do things a little quicker and easier, but opens up more opportunities, certainly, compared to going down to the local car dealership and signing autographs, which takes a little bit, maybe potentially more time. So maybe in some way, social media might be a blessing that way. If you don't pay attention to school in a Patriot League school like Colgate, you're going to be in trouble fast. It is not an easy place. It's a challenging educational institution, and it's a place you have to stay on top of your academics. So I'm not sure when things come right down to it. Obviously, NIL is something that people want to focus on and student athletes want to be part of. But if it makes sort of a demand on their time that's greater than their academics, I think that we're going to start to see other problems. And I would find that hard to believe with most of our student athletes.
Mm. No, that's a good point of view. I think that, yeah, you guys are so academically driven that hopefully that doesn't, you know, that won't be the case.
Right on.
Okay, let's flip it around a bit. So the quick fire round, I'm just going to ask you some quick questions and hopefully get some answers and learn some more about you.
Oh boy.
All right. Sporting hero growing up.
Oh, Tiger Woods.
All right. Guilty music pleasure.
It doesn't probably fit the age and probably the look, but hard rock probably would be my thing. If you walked in my office and I was playing some, I might get some interesting looks, but that's what's usually blaring on the headphones when I'm working out.
Biggest mentor in career to date?
Probably the guy that hired me here, Marty Erb, was the longtime head athletic trainer. He's since retired. And, you know, he gave me an opportunity here for a place that like I said, I've been blessed to be at for quite some time.
Favorite TV show, Netflix show, HBO, Hulu, whatever it is, streaming show?
Yeah, that's a good question. I watch a lot of sports. That's probably a dumb thing to say because it's obvious. But I kind of like that show, The Blacklist. I guess that I watched that on Netflix.
Okay. If you could have been a pro in one sport, what would it be? I kind of know the answer, but I'll make sure we get the right one.
I'd be right beside Tiger. I'd be playing golf.
I was actually wrong. I assumed ice hockey, but no, you wanted to be the golfer then.
That'd be a second choice for sure. But golf is such a nice, long, wonderful life of play, and I'd like to do that.
Okay, well, then I'm sorry. I got to go there. Are you going to go with the PGA or LIV when you turn pro?
Oh, PGA, LIV drives me insane. We could do another podcast on that if you want.
Awesome. I'd be up for that. Okay.
I'm a traditionalist, so.
Yeah, I don't know all the details, but I'm definitely, I fall on the PGA side as well. So
that's good to hear.
I guess we'll still be friends after this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Chosen superpower.
Instant travel. I don't know if that is one, but that's what I'd go with. I can't stand travel. So like just to be able to say, I'm going to go to Hawaii. Boom, I'm there. I'll take that one.
Skip the taxi, the 4:30 wake up.
That's right.
Security. That's right. And
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people might say flying, like to be able to actually physically fly, but I don't even want to take that time. Let's just get there.
Okay. I like it. Okay. So with your location, I've got to ask, are you going for the Knicks or the Nets?
Oh, good Lord. NBA. No, neither. Celtics. I'm a New England guy, so I'll go Celtics.
Oh, okay. Islanders or Rangers?
No chance. 7-1 Bruins. I think they're 7-1 right now. So we'll take them.
Okay. So the clean Boston sweep there.
That's right.
Let's get on to the first beat questions. So going back to 2018, when we started to work together, why did you choose first beat?
Yeah. So I first heard of first beat actually at a conference. I'm struggling to think of what it was. I think it was a CSCS hockey training. So actually NSCA, I should say, out in Colorado Springs. I heard a strength coach talking about, you know, doing some monitoring. I won't say who it was. I don't think it matters, but I won't say who it was. Anyway, and was very optimistic and very complimentary of First Beat as a company. I never even heard of it. And I looked into it and the rest is history. That was where I heard it. And it has worked out quite well.
Okay, good story. The most useful of all the features metrics, what's your favorite or what do you find that the best to use with the teams?
Yeah, I focus on four things really. Well, kind of three things. So TRIMP, obviously, and TRIMP per minute. I find TRIMP per minute to be a very valuable tool when describing the nature of a practice or a session with our coaches, mm-hmm. because TRIMP is nice, but you know, 100 TRIMP in 2 hours and 100 TRIMP in 1 hour are very different looking practice. So
exactly.
Being able to describe that intensity. And I like the way that First Beat added that to the live view. And then the other aspect I really focus on with our coaches is both acute and chronic workload and you know, the ratio certainly, but looking at those two things really hits home for them to be able to take that 7-day workload and compare it to the, you know, to the month long. I think it's interesting how coaches can kind of lose sight of the workloads that they're putting on their student athletes. And it may be driven, you know, very naturally on, you know, coming off a loss. We might be this, we might be that. They throw that one practice in there that's just huge huge shrimp because they're grumpy and everybody's grumpy and they want to, you know, fix everything and all that. And if you do that long enough, you know, and you end up with these large 7-day acute workloads and they're substantially higher than your chronic workload, then, you know, are we setting them up for injury? Are we doing the best thing for our teams and that sort of things? That kind of measure really, I think, is something that hits home with them.
Yeah, I love that you used the shrimp per minute and the acute to chronic, because what we noticed was it wasn't even like the most requested, but everybody we spoke to was, oh yeah, I just calculate this and we're calculating this. And we said, well, you know, we can just get that calculated for you if that's, you know, what you're doing.
Right. We were just looking at me and the men's basketball coach actually just the other day, we're looking at the acute and chronic and plotted it on the cloud there just with the line graph. And it was neat to see the steady climb in chronic throughout the past 2 months. And then where his line of acute kind of came above or below and it kind of bounced back and forth. It was a really nice graphical representation of a nice way to build a preseason, we thought. So being able to physically see that was very valuable.
Nice. Yeah. And I think the value in that too is they may not understand what that grumpy session actually does or what it looks like. So when you say, hey, guess what? When you were mad because they played bad in that next practice, it was actually more intense than the game that they just played.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. Yep. It's a very human reaction and we see it in all levels, but it's something to be aware of. And it's hard to complain about that patellar tendonitis or that Achilles thing that came up and whatnot when actually we may have been the ones that did it.
Yep. Exactly. Accountability. Mm-hmm. How has it changed like over the years that you've used First Beat kind of from the first year to now?
To me, I don't know if I've changed much. I've learned more about it, obviously, but what's changed the most, I think, was the new sensor and the new system. I think that was super valuable and made things so much easier. You know, back early on, we were setting up the antenna and hooking it up to a PC and the setup is so much easier. The fact that the new sensor has memory and we can do several sessions before we download and that sort of thing if we wanted to. I think that has made it super, super valuable. We have, I must admit, not gotten too much into some of the external load with the movement. We're mostly just on internal. And so we'd like to do that over the next little bit, is start to take a look at some of those measures.
Yeah, I think that's by far the best way to do it, is get completely comfortable with that internal. And once you're where you want to be, okay, hey, let's start to look at the external and it'll paint a pretty clear picture.
Right on.
Any differences kind of how you've seen First Beat used between the basketball and hockey?
Oh gosh, yeah. Hockey is actually a super interesting and sort of easy sport to analyze because it's very cyclical, right? Like it's one every four shifts, a forward goes out generally. You know, if you take penalty kill and power play out of it, you know, defensemen like one every three shifts, they're going to go out, that sort of thing. And you see these really neat period by period graphical representations of their heart rate. And it's easy to tell, you know, sometimes you could pick out where a power play was or a penalty kill or, you know, when someone got a penalty and that sort of thing. So analyzing hockey, I feel like it's easy. Mm-hmm. Basketball, you know, kids go out and they're on the floor for a certain period of time and then they sit down for a long time, perhaps. Or you have people that don't even play in the game, even though they're there. Generally, every hockey player at least has a shift or two. The actual differences in the sports make it a little bit interesting to take a look at what the data looks like on a session by session basis. Mm-hmm. If you keep coming back to the shrimp itself and the workloads and what the total effect of that session was, really, it doesn't matter what sport you're playing.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely some differences in the sports, but yeah. Shrimp is shrimp and shrimp per minute is shrimp per minute at the end of the day.
That's right.
Kind of on that same note, if you could go back when you started with First Beat, kind of what would you tell yourself?
Yeah, take the time to build the data. I think initially, when a season starts, right? Not just starting using a system like this at all, but even when a season starts, you know, it was funny. One of the first times we put them on basketball a couple of years ago, you know, after the first practice, okay, what was that like? Like, all right, let's pump the brakes just a little bit. Let's, you know, but I was the same way when I started. And then, you know, we take a look at one session and it's just in isolation. It almost doesn't tell you too much. You need to have that data over time to know what's typical. And even as the system adjusts to max heart rates and things like that, as it gets to know a player, if you will, it takes a little bit of time to have really valid data. So patience, I guess, would probably be how to answer your question. Just have some patience.
Yeah, I think that's tough because, you know, you've invested the money, you want your return, and this is really interesting and exciting. But yeah, at the same time, you know, when I get those phone calls, I can look at it, talk to you about practice, but I don't know your players. I don't know your system.
That's right.
What's practice plan for next week? All that fun stuff.
Yeah. And you have first year players that come in have never worn them before and we have no data on them. So let's take the time and get it and see what it looks like.
Yep, exactly. Okay. Well, hey, this has been great. I think that's all the time that we've got for this episode. Steve, thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
I appreciate it. Thanks for asking me. It's a pleasure.
And if you like this episode and want to hear more like it, make sure to subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the First Beat Sports Podcast. For more information about us and our sports monitoring systems, give us a call at 435-363-9533. Or you can send us an email to sports@firstbeat.com. You can also visit us online at www.firstbeat.com. Thanks a lot for listening today, and don't forget to be with us on the next edition of the First Beat Sports Podcast.